You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This podcast is brought to you by IG, a global leader in online trading and authorized financial services provider. The JSE has closed its doors for another day, and as it's a Tuesday, it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow, but with a difference, because as it's a Tuesday, it's the double-headed dream team of David Shapiro from Sasum Securities and also Nick Kunzer accompanying him, and Nick is from Sanlam Private Wealth. David, there's a lot going on, isn't there? I mean, it's every time I look at the screen, there's a new record here, whether it be the MSCI, whether it be South Korea, whether it be South Africa, it just keeps on going up. It's very good news.
What's remarkable about South Africa, and I'm going to start there, because if we look at the index today, it's flat. It's down.
Yeah.
Miners, which had a very good run in the first 2 weeks of the year, are unwinding a little, so they're taking the market down. But if you go down below, call it the top 80 shares, maybe down to 80 to 160, there's big activity there and big, big moves, you know, which is – so if you're in a small cap fund or a medium cap fund, you're just shooting the lights out. It's not reflected in the all share or the top 40. So I think there is certainly a move into those shares. And just on global markets as well, there's big thing happening. I think suddenly there's affirmation for Janet Yellen and support for Janet Yellen, whose hearing will be heard, I think, 5 o'clock our time. It's now, I think.
Yes.
Or no, sorry. It could be now. I might have my times mixed up. But big money flowing into Hong Kong today. You know, Hong Kong stocks at records. I can see that being reflected on Wall Street as well, because I follow the ADR. So there seems to be a little bit of a buzz ahead of Biden's confirmation. And I think the end of the yellow man, I think it's finally happened. And I think people are breathing one big sigh of relief.
Okay. That's another thing as well. The emerging markets, we were talking off air, David, about you being a link to or getting a really good service from a Swiss institution. But, Nick, when I look at emerging markets, I sit down to myself and I looked at a graph of the Russian ruble. And I thought to myself, okay, let's see what's going on here. We've got the oil price. What does Russia do? It produces commodities. It's as simple as that. It produces wheat, which has been going through the roof. It produces platinum group metals, which have been doing incredibly well as a basket. It produces oil, and the oil price has tripled in a matter of a few months. The gold price has gone up. And I think to myself, it's not difficult to work out. That's why I used to be a commodity trader, because it's quite easy to work out what's going on, because there's supply and there's demand, and when they go up, the countries that produce them do well. So the Russia is one thing, so the ruble will go stronger for me, but of course South Africa as well, iron ore, for goodness sake. Emerging markets are suddenly actually have a valid reason to be going up.
Yes, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, this is exactly what happen. I think, you know, it has been the big, I think, macro play. If you look at the start of this year, everyone calling for this weaker dollar to start with. We saw that this weekend, open interest on the dollar shorts, the biggest on record now of everyone shorting the dollar. The weaker dollar is good for emerging markets. The weaker dollar, as we know, is good for commodity currencies and commodities itself. And we can see, if you take out the weaker dollar, though, just look at where the demand's coming from. Mm. As you said, you know, corn and soft commodities and everything from the likes of, I've spoken about it before, like milk futures have been like limit up. There's a huge demand.
Mm.
And then on top of it off, if you see where, as the economies were so disrupted last year, global trade was a complete mess. Apparently half the containers are sitting in Panama, the other half are stuck on the other side of the globe. As the world economy starts to open up again, we saw that, I sent you both of you guys a note on shipping prices up sort of fourfold. There's a massive demand now to get these commodities and these supply chains back online again. And I think we're getting that real sort of tailwind now to emerging markets, to these sort of commodity currencies as well. Look what the Rand's done. And if I can also just add to the fact that, as David pointed out, you know, we might be heading an environment where I've been for a while as well, that it might not be that one size fits all. We might be heading into a little bit of a sector stock pickers market now. You have to pick where you are for, you know, for 10 odd years, it's been quite easy. You know, you just buy an ETF or buy an exposure to the market. And I think now you've got to be quite specific. You're seeing that little rotation out of certain sectors into other areas. You're seeing the fund managers who control the billions and billions of dollars, where they're picking their plays, leaning more into EM and that sort of stuff. So I think we're in for a very exciting year. And if we just get a little bit of the business that's starting to flow into EM like you're seeing now, you know, South Africa might be okay. We might get a little bit of a sort of a win behind us here.
Well, there's a bit of wind behind us already, actually, especially when it comes to retailers. I mean, with, for example, the Fashini Group Limited, TFG, trading update for the third quarter and the 9 months to 26th of December 2020. The share price up 8.3%, David. You're a cynic when it comes to South African companies, and you have various views on certain retailers. But, but I mean, look at Fashini, for goodness sake. Where did that come from? Well, 8.3% higher.
Well, if you look at Truist, on Friday evening, they came out with an update which was ahead of expectations. But when I say ahead of expectations, not dramatic. They didn't point to the fact that everybody was rushing out and buying clothing and so on. In fact, their businesses are quite poor. But they opened up on Monday, up 10%. They open up again today, another 10%. Now, you say, was this a kind of result that would attract a 20% gain, you know, in Fashini? Yeah. And what is it pointing to? Yes, it's better than expected, and I can understand that some of the other retailers, it led people to believe that the other retailers would be doing better than the market thought. But at the end, this economy is under huge pressure. We can't even afford to pay for the vaccine. We're still in not only lockdown, but we're also having load shedding. So there's still a huge number of issues. We're still paying, you know, we have a huge unemployment problem. We're using whatever money we have to keep those people who haven't got jobs, who haven't got money, just in food and education and health, whatever it is. So it's an economy that's under pressure. So I, you know, when I look at the bare facts, I'm saying, okay, emerging market investors, you want to buy South Africa, good luck. You know, I'm not going to stop you doing this. I understand markets are markets. So I will allow this to run, and I will celebrate the run, because I don't, you know, I'd rather that it was going in an upward direction than a downward direction. But I think sometimes, you know, things can run ahead of themselves. So am I buying retailers? No. But what I am, what I am recognizing is that there's a lot of money flowing in to the medium and small cap areas.
Yes. I'm going to jump onto the end of that conversation, because that's what I think a lot of the sort of answers are coming from for these questions, in that there's a lot of money and liquidity sloshing around the system, and there's going to be more. There's going to be another $1.9 or $2 trillion confirmed in the next 48 hours coming in as well. And you look at something like a Truist, as you've been speaking about now, you know, it might not just be a case of valuations. It might literally be a case of someone saying the share used to be 120 Rand 3 years ago. It's 41 Rand now. It's still got a dividend yield. It's got positive cash flow. Yes, we know things are bad, but it should be higher. What are we going to buy? Let's look down for a basket of beaten down shares and just buy them. Mm. And it might be as simple, Nick, of the amount of money looking for a home. As simple as
that. I love that TikTok that you sent out yesterday. You know, I don't know whether Lindsay was on the list and whether he saw.
Yeah, he was.
Where there were two
hipsters.
What would you call it? In the United States, they looked very fashionable and young. And they said, look, in lockdown, you want to make money, this is what you do.
Yeah.
You go on to Robinhood, you look at a share that's pointing upwards, you just buy it because a few days later it's going to be higher, and you get out, and we're making a huge amount of money. And that was their attitude. Look at it. If the chart is pointing upwards, it means that it's going to continue. And as I said, I said, hell, I wish I would have known this 50 years ago. I would have made so much money, you know, because to be honest, it's so easy. Just look for a chart that's pointing upwards and get on the, you know. So it comes back to it comes back to where we are at the moment, which I don't mind. I love these kind of markets.
I'm exactly the same. I'm not going to fight it. I think it's so nice after all the year we've been through to see these shares up. But, you know, at some point, it's not going to be so easy. When we start when we start ticking up in interest rates, and when the sort of, I don't know, the plates of the investment world shift a little bit, decisions are going to have to be made. But for now, it's clearly, as we said off air, that I guess the point of least resistance for equities for the moment is clearly to the upside.
There was a stock called FTFT. The code was FTFT, a very obscure stock that an American friend of mine pointed out to me. He said, look, I've been watching this stock. He's got 5,000 stocks on his screen, and they flash away, like you, Nick, with all your sophisticated trading machinery in your screens. You know, things flashing up all the time. I don't know how you sleep at night. But anyway, the point is that this share was 96 US cents. Per share on, I think it was Tuesday of last week. By Thursday, it was $11.29 because something, I don't know what it does, it's got something to do with blockchain and online payments and things like that. Also had a fruit juice concentrate business on the side. And it's quite a diversified little company. But from 96 cents, and as I was talking to this chap, he says, I'm long at this thing, it's just going to $11.29. How can you do that? It's 10 times your money in 36 hours. It's because of these Robin Hood chaps all punting away. It's ridiculous. Anyway, the punters today.
No, just before you move, I mean, just to put it in perspective. So there was a note that the Financial Times or Bloomberg were talking about. They've been observing the trading in penny shares in the last couple of weeks, and in fact, on average, the volume of the stocks traded were normally like 5 or 6% of shares would be traded on a daily basis of under $1, as we call a penny share.
Yes.
But last week, on 1 or 2 days, how much percentage do you think were traded on shares of the total volume on shares that were under $1?
No idea, but you're going to tell us.
40%.
Gosh.
It normally accounts for 2 or 3%. 40% of all shares traded on volume in America on the one day were shares that were traded under a dollar and a penny, and we know exactly who's buying those shares.
Yeah.
So it's a very easy liquid sloshing around the market environment now. And as we said, the point of least resistance for now is up.
What's that film where the chap started with a penny? Penny shares at a stock sheet and would phone up people. They were unlisted stocks.
The boiler.
The boiler room. No, boiler. The Wolf of Wall Street. That one, yeah. But the boiler room as well, yeah. But it just seems, imagine if we'd have been stockbrokers during these days now.
Yeah.
It's not that difficult. I don't think.
You wouldn't do it, Lindsay.
Why not?
I don't think you've got the. Just talking to you, we haven't got that kind of character because basically you're a snake oil salesman.
Yes.
You know, you've got to phone up some innocent old lady there who's got her savings and you've got to try and convince her to go, this is the best thing.
Yes.
And if you've got that kind of morality or you've got that kind of conscience, you can do it. But I think for the vast majority of people, I don't think. It's like,
but it's also.
It's clubbing seals. You know,
but you know the environment? The environment is at the moment with the likes of Twitter, with the likes of social media platforms. Yeah. Your audience is even bigger than it was. But before, your audience used to be an old phone directory and a phone. I mean, that's how I started as well. I'm sure David's got memories of hitting the phones and making cold calls.
So, yes.
I mean, that's what we did. Nowadays, you can blast out a tweet that can see 20 billion people if you wanted. And I mean, I've got so many different examples along with that Twitter thing I sent you guys with the two hipsters speaking.
Oh.
I mean, there's another case last week. I don't know if any of you know if you follow it. It was a Netflix show that was one of the biggest viewed on The Tiger King.
Yes.
I'm sure you both saw it. Anyway, the lady that had the rival lion in camp or whatever it was called. Anyway, she went on Twitter last week and did a little, literally little 20-second video where she punted a penny share, okay? The share was up 200% 2 minutes later. I mean, that's the environment we're in, you know?
Yeah.
You never had the good fortune, it was just before my time, to have lived in the 1969 boom, and which was a property boom here. When I say a property boom, it was characterized by the listing of a huge number of property shares, Glen Annel, Tucker, Corley Drive Estates. There were many, many more. And at that stage, everybody, you would line up. I remember our dealer. He actually, because I mean, we used to deal in an open outcry market. And Lindsay had to put a table on the floor because there were so many people. We were the brokers for Glen Annel at that stage, which was an incredibly popular investment. I mean, these companies all went bung afterwards. But I mean, he stood on the floor, and because he couldn't stand, he sat down, he brought a table onto the floor, sat there, and people just lined up, and he was just allocating shares or trading whatever they wanted to do. Now, that was the equivalent. I mean, it was nowhere near as efficient as today and much more smaller, but the mentality was the same. So I've lived through that in 69. I came in the aftermath of that, but I sat through this in 87. I've sat through it a number of times. And what happens is when this finally does come down and unwind, then you're going to find all the moans and everybody marching on the stock exchange for allowing this recklessness to have, you know what I mean? And they're going to say, well, what must we do? You know, what can we do? So they will turn on the authorities when this all blows up.
There definitely seems to be, just our conversation now this evening, there definitely seems to be a little bit of speculative mania coming into the markets at the moment. You hard to argue against it.
And long, well, I mean, if people are making money, then fantastic. But anyway,
yeah, they are making money.
Yes. Good luck to them.
No, the net they lose. So you know, because what happens, the psychology is that people begin, especially the uninitiated, that couple that we saw in that TikTok, they think it's so easy and they keep doubling up.
Yeah.
And they double up and double up. And they get six trades right and the seventh trade takes them like snakes and ladders all down to the beginning again. And that's where they are. But what happens is Janet Yellen is now testifying.
Yes.
And her statement is, we know that we're going to increase the debt. We know all about the debt. But with interest rates so low, we have to go big. So a very positive statement. I haven't seen how markets are responding there, but that's what her view is. So Janet's going to go, you know, if we're going to go big, let's go big.
Well done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got a good track record. I thought she was quite good in her previous position. But anyway.
Lindsay, we're not finished. I mean, when I say these markets are not finished, I think they're only just beginning. That's what I'm trying to get
It's at. Only January the 19th, David. I'm still confident about my bet. It's January the 19th for
significant. I know that. We've forgotten about
well,
that.
Well, I mean, our friends at Goldman Sachs reported this afternoon a few hours ago.
What did they say?
And their bank's profit more than doubled in the fourth quarter. And guess where it all came from?
Trading.
Trading revenue.
Proprietary trading, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep, so there we go.
Okay. Dollar rand. Look at this dollar rand. 14.97. British pound against the rand, 20.38. Euro rand is 18.15. Euro dollar, 121.20, which is a 0.4% weaker US dollar. The pound's 136.10. Gold price is down $4 to 18.34.5. The platinum price is down a couple to 10.83. Where's palladium, please, Nick?
Down a quarter as well, $6 down, 2365.
Okay, the oil price is up 0.7% for the West Texas, which is currently prevailing at 52.72. And Brent crude oil is $55.69 per barrel, which is up 1.75%. Where's Bitcoin, please, Nick?
Bitcoin is actually, with the risk on mood, is also up $865, 37,090 at the moment.
Not bad. And just bear in mind that it was, 43,000 a week ago, something like that. Was that the high, I think?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. US 10-year bond is coming up on my screen now. That's one, let's call it 112. It was 109 just before the US holiday. So it's three big basis points, 300 basis points. Lower for the price and higher for the yield. And Nick, S&P, NASDAQ and Dow Jones, please. Both, they're all up, but nothing too spectacular, I don't think.
They're all up, but I will add they're about 0.5% off their highs as the US opens. So we start with S&P 37.80, up 0.5%. We have the NASDAQ up 0.8%. And we have the Dow Jones up 0.25%, but they're all hovering about 1% off the all-time highs.
Truworths on the JSE was the leader on my board anyway, just about 9% higher, off its highs, but still nonetheless 9%. And David, not a big fan of its apparel offering, but TFG is up 8.2%. That's the Fashini Group. Mr. Price completing the top three. Up 7% nearly. Cartrack keeps on going. It's up 6% to 62.36. And Bidvest coming in, an unlikely gainer today, up 5.5%. On the downside, more or less all diggers or at least producers of commodities. Goldfields down 5.2, Pan African Resources down 3.8, Anglo Gold Ashanti down 3.2, Anglo American, the big one, down 3.2 as well, and Mondi PLC down 2.8%. We were talking, David, Nick and I, this morning about inflation. This is our theme. We had a theme at the end of last year, and that was the bond yield in the US, and we got that right. And we've been initiated by Nick. We've been talking about inflation. So, Nick, over to you, and tell David what we spoke about when it comes to the shipping rates.
Yeah, so, I mean, I sent that note to you both, and it was front page of the Financial Times as well. They also ran with the story. The cost of shipping, which has been a – if you ever want to think about what the disruptive lockdown the world has been, well, you know, we rely on an interconnected world and we ship stuff all over the place. And that's been really disrupted. So about 8 weeks ago, the cost of shipping a 40-foot container from China to Europe would have cost you $2,000 thereabouts, dollars, give or take a little bit. And 8 weeks later, i.e. last week, that same container – to ship your rubber flip-flops from China to Europe is now going to cost you $9,000. So, it's not a – I don't know how these things work. I don't know how permanent they are.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something to consider.
Funny, I spoke about that this morning, and I've got a very good answer because I asked the question, if the Chinese economy is picking up, how is that going to affect the rest of the world? You know, because we've seen some very good numbers coming out of China. And the reply was, hold on, the Chinese economy has been lifted by stimulus measures. What happens, though, also a lot of the demand at the moment because of lockdown is for things. We're not buying services, we're buying things. Flip-flops, you know, or Takealot or whatever. Sorry, you know, Amazon. We're buying things for our home and so on. And the view is that down the line, when the pandemic starts to ease back, second quarter, third quarter, whatever it is, the shift in spending will go back to services and therefore move away from things and therefore, you know, bring lower the kind of exports that China is doing at the moment. So it was one – I asked the same question as you've been talking about and saying, you know, is this sustainable? Is this going to continue? And the view is that there'll be a kind of balancing out of demand, you know, back to services. I'm hoping. Again, I'm saying this was a response. It's a discussion point.
So okay.
Hopefully those rates come down.
I'm going to start bringing in the CRB index as well. And CRB stands for Commodity Research Bureau. It's owned, or rather administered now, by Thomson Reuters. And it's got everything. I mean, the top of the list of the basket of commodities that makes up the index is crude oil. That's the big one, obviously, because it's the biggest traded commodity. But it's got something called naphtha, ethanol. It's got uranium, gold, silver, platinum, all the other ones, palm oil, cheese, milk, rubber, the whole lot. Every single commodity that you can trade makes up the CRB index. It's gone from 110 in May, David, as again Nick and I were talking about this morning, 110 in May of last year to its current level of nearly 190. Now, that is a massive, massive move, and that is inflationary. Maybe for a while they don't pass on this to people like us, the punters, but they have to eventually, and that is why my view is that interest rates are going to go up this year. It's bubbling under the inflation story, and something's got to give at some stage. So along with Bitcoin and the US 10-year, I'm going to add the CRB index to our little discussion each evening. But you're still convinced that Janet Yellen will win you your bet?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, I think if you want to look at inflation, just look at wage inflation. Look at the things that really push it up on a permanent basis. We're not seeing it there. No. I also think a lot of the technology developments and that keep prices down. I think the digitization of the global economy. I was reading, I was talking to Lindsay yesterday, Nick, about, you know, things like Zara and that, where if you went into a shop, you'd buy a whole bundle of clothes and the prices were set. Now, if you're on a site, it's a lot more difficult because people are much more, what do? They're much more bargain aware.
and look for better prices. So if they can see something at Zara XYZ and they can find it at XYZ minus 10, they're going to go to the other one. They're not necessarily going to be brand that terribly brand conscious. So I still think they're counter forces to the things that we are talking about. But I agree, there will be some inflationary there has to be some kind of inflationary pressure upwards. Whether it gets to a point which convinces the Fed that they just have to increase rates, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be moderate inflation, but I don't think it's going to be hyperinflation.
All right.
No, but inflation just while we're on this topic, I mean, inflation has been the one sort of thing missing from the equation for a better part of a decade. And we know the reasons why. It's, you know, a lot of people have spoken about the productivity and how tech industry, et cetera, has made things that much more productive. And we've heard all the stories. We've also heard, obviously, don't forget the elephant in the room, and the central banks around the world have artificially kept the curves low and quantitative easing and numerous things. So there's a number of reasons we can all talk about. Everyone's got a version of why inflation is not being around. But inflation at some point is going to come back. And I just wonder aloud if the indicators that I've been sort of watching for decades and have gone no, have all of a sudden are starting to come to the front of my watch list. The things like soft commodities, and let's not forget oil. I mean, oil was done nothing for ages, and all of a sudden it's up $50.
Yes. I would rather have an inflationary world than a deflationary world.
Absolutely. You know, the Japanese would jump that opportunity. Yeah. They spent better part of 40 years not having inflation. So
I don't mind it. I really don't mind.
Agreed. And inflation is, for central bankers, it's one of those blunt tools they can target by just raising interest rates. The problem is when you've got so much debt around, that's when it starts to become a little bit more complicated on the equation. You can't just raise rates 1 or 2% when you've got $3 trillion worth of debt sitting on your front door. So that's why I think there's more. You know, this conversation will get interesting, I think, as the next few months prepare.
Why I say that, I promise you, Janet Yellen's statement does not suggest that rates are going to go up.
Things
if
change.
If anything, they're going to remain down.
Things change, David Shapiro. You watch out. Nick, give us the closing indices, if you would.
Yeah, so the closing, the all share doesn't tell the whole story because it didn't look like much of a day. But if you pull back the layers, there was a bit of a day. So the all share was only down 110 points, 0.17%, 63,603. The top 40 down 0.3%. Financials, they were 0.85% stronger with the stronger rand. Industrials, they had a cracking session today, up almost 4%, 3.76% firmer. Healthcare 1.6% firmer. Technology shares, that's your processing, your NUSPAs, they were up almost 1%. On the downside, basic materials, they were a bit soggy today, down 1.46%, and consumer non-cyclicals 1.46%.
And the value traded was what?
Value traded today was just managed to squeeze over 20.705 billion.
Very good indeed. The next time we speak, the three of us, there'll be a new president in the White House. David, it's been a hell of a 4 years, hasn't it?
Well, the worst. The absolute worst.
Worst president
that's
ever.
Why, yeah. Worse than ever. Yeah. And I think that's why there's just so much relief. I think people, once they see Biden, once they listen to what he's going to say and they see the people around him, I think Americans, by and large, are going to feel a lot better than they have over the last 4 years.
Good. On that happy note, we will leave it. Thank you, gentlemen. Nick Kunzer is from Sandham Private Wealth. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was brought to you by IG, a global leader in online trading and authorized financial services provider. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.